From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Finland and South Korea, number one and two in the world in a new global education survey. The U.S. lagging at number 17. But here's the twist. Finland and South Korea have almost opposite ways to the top. Finland, shorter school days than we have, and less homework. South Korea, hyper-intense, non-stop study and competition. How do two such apparently different ways point to the top? And what can we learn this hour on Point, listening to Finland and South Korea on education? You can join the conversation. What's it take to be the world's best in education? Are we willing to do that in the United States? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Here's the latest global education ranking from the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The survey, called Program for International Student Assessment, or PISA, measures 15-year-olds in more than 60 countries on math, science, and reading. Finland ranked number one, South Korea number two, the U.S. number 17. We'll go in a moment to Seoul, South Korea, but first, let's hear the Finland side of the story. Joining us today from Boca Raton in Florida is Pasi Sahlberg. He's a leading voice on Finland's education system and an advisor to educators around the world. He's director general of the Center for International Mobility and Cooperation in Helsinki, which operates within the Finnish Ministry of Education and Culture. He's a former math and science teacher and author of Finnish Lessons, where you can learn from educational change in Finland. Pasi Sahlberg, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
We're struck in reading about just how different Finland and South Korea are. We'll hear in a moment about South Korea's hours and hours of school and extra school and very strict competition and lots of testing. How is Finland different from that, Pasi?
Well, I think we have very much more relaxed overall atmosphere in our schools, and we try to, the main principle in most part of the schooling is to try to do everything we need to do during the school day, and I think somehow in our culture we also believe that if you try to do less, you sometimes achieve more, and somehow it seems to be playing out just right in education. And I think the key issue in Finnish schooling is that most of the time we have with pupils and students, we try to focus and concentrate on what we call real learning rather than thinking about tests or examinations ahead. And somehow I think this is showing up in the results.
Do students in Finland go to extra school, after school classes, extra tutoring? Is that common in Finland?
No, it's not. If we look at the, there may be some students in the later stage of the high school when they're already 17, 18 years old, but in the primary and junior high school level, it's a very, very rare. We don't really have any institutionalized after-school instruction or training in Finland. So my brief answer is that it's not really common at all.
Is there high-stakes testing along the way in elementary school, middle school, high school in Finland?
Well, that's probably the reason we don't have this after-school learning and training, because we only have one external standardized examination, and that's in the end of your high school when our students are 18, 19 years old. So all the other assessments and evaluation of students are done by teachers during the course of the 12th year of education. So that's why I think there's not such a need for any additional tuition for kids.
One test just at the end of it all.
That's right.
What about, we're trying to figure out how you guys pull off this miracle. What about the education environment, the atmosphere in the classroom?
Well, as I said, I think what I hear, for example, from many of the American visitors to Finnish schools, that they describe atmosphere in Finnish schools fairly relaxed, and all students always, they speak to their teachers with their first name, and classrooms are set in a very informal way. And I think the absence of the standardized tests in Finland are really also enhancing this relaxed atmosphere, that you can focus on what you need is important for learning, and rather than you know, asking students and children to focus on the forthcoming examinations or tests.
So you tell us, Pasi, what is it about what Finland does that you think that puts it at the number one ranking in the world? Describe the context, or I don't know, the environment around the schools, or what happens in the classrooms with as much particularity as you can to help us understand how you achieve this.
Okay. You know, this is probably the most frequently asked question by many educators now. And frankly speaking, I think that many people they're looking for the answer to this question from, I would say, not right places. Like, if you look at the Finnish classrooms, what teachers and students are doing, you don't see any kind of a miracle pedagogy or very effective methods of teaching.
In fact, if I may, you've written that a lot of the in-class manner of teaching is taken from American research and innovation.
Yeah, that's that, if you look at the overall culture of Finnish school teaching, that's very often based on the American innovations of teaching methods or assessments or so mm-hmm. on. But let me get back to your previous question.
Yeah.
I think the solution, the answer really to the question of why Finland is doing so well in education is in two areas really. One is the that we are taking a very kind of a holistic view on improving education systems, meaning that we try to make sure that the starting from the well-being and health and happiness of children, that everybody will have kind of a conditions and opportunities to learn. So this means that in the early years of schooling, like the first 3, 4, 5 years of primary school, the main focus will almost always be on well-being and health and, you know, preparing children for learning, not so much in academic performance and achievement as it seems to be in other many other countries. The other one that Finland has taken very seriously, just like South Korea, is the question of teachers, that we require that you cannot teach in a Finnish school unless you have a master's degree from one of our university. We are not allowing anybody to teach in schools that would be through your programs like Teach for America or anything like this. So it's a teaching profession is standardized in a way that medical or legal professions are in all the other countries. And that's why I think we have a situation now where all the teachers are really capable of doing the best that they must do for everybody to learn.
And I'm reading that teaching positions are highly sought after in Finland. You've got 10, as many as 10 applicants for every primary school teaching position. This is a high status, much sought after career in Finland. Why, Pasi?
Well, it's partly because the academic training that teachers must go through to earn their master's degrees is standardized to the level of any other academic university-based master's degree in Finland. So it doesn't matter if you study law or medicine or anything else. It's you study 5 to 6 years in the universities, and your degree will be good for any other job, for example, in the public sector or in a government positions. The other one, equally important, is that I think how young Finnish people, when they choose their careers and think about teaching, that they see their school work in a school pretty much like they would be working in a medical clinic or in a legal office, that they are autonomous, trusted professionals where they have time to work with other colleagues with a similar training, and they have a power to decide and plan their work and also evaluate and decide and judge the results of their work. And that's why I think the question of too much standardized testing and too much control over teachers' work can be harmful.
You talk about well-being, and of course that comes from policies that go well beyond the school. I mean, in Finland, all children by law have access to childcare, to comprehensive health care, to preschool in their own communities. And then there's the issue of funding of schools. In the United States, you can see very different levels of quality of what's delivered. What about funding of schools in Finland?
You mean the level of funding, how much
Yes.
we spend on?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the there seems to be a great deal of equality of funding.
Exactly, yes. The main principle in the entire country is now that money to the school should go according to the needs and conditions that the schools are, excuse me, for example, if they are more immigrant or uneducated, unemployed families in the community that the school should. And they normally receive more resources to be able to cope with these things. So, in other words, they can spend more on the well-being and health and care services in the school. Overall, Finland is spending very close to what the OECD countries on average are spending in education, and school-level spending in Finnish schools is significantly less than it is in the United States on average.
Is your spectacular ranking number one, is it in part because it's a relatively homogeneous country, a relatively small country, 5.5 million people?
It can be partly because of this, but it's not the only reason for this, because if you look at the interesting comparison for Finland is our neighbors in Scandinavia or Nordic countries. You have Sweden, Norway, Denmark, mm-hmm. Fairly similar countries, both in size and demographically, and their performance in education is very different. So if it was only the size and the kind of a homogeneous nature of the society, then there should be many other countries that are very similar to perform well. But of course, it's being small and fairly homogeneous has a role to play in this, but you cannot explain everything, so there has to be something else in this picture as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the two top-ranked countries in the world for education. Finland, number one, South Korea, number two, and how they get to the top by very different paths, what the U.S. might learn here. Here's a little sound of a teacher in Finland helping young students around 7 years old read words posted on papers beside a chalkboard. The video was produced by the Pearson Foundation.
Tämä oli.
Allu.
Allu. Allu. Tämä oli.
Tuuli.
Tuuli.
Kaiva.
Kaiva.
And here from South Korea, maybe 13, 14-year-olds in a Korean school concluding class. Teacher concluding calls on the class leader. A student sitting in front of the class. That leader stands and tells the class to bow to the teacher. The class bows, thanks the teacher. The teacher tells her students to put away their computers. Every student working on a computer.
자, 기기 넣어주세요, 이제.
Okay, back to Finland. Here's a BBC reporter in November observing a class of 11-year-olds learning French in a school in Helsinki. The teacher pronounces the French word. Students repeat after her.
Le café.
Le café.
Le salon de thé.
Le salon de thé.
Learning foreign languages here is seen as key.
Le sel. Le
sucre. For these 11-year-olds, French is not their second, but their third language.
A very little high-tech in the Finnish classroom. Back to Korea. Well, here's a Reuters talking with a sixth-grade Korean student in Seoul about why he prefers using a laptop technology all over in Seoul instead of textbooks.
I can do internet searches. Also, I prefer experiencing directly to just writing. I feel like printed textbooks are old.
Whatever they're doing, they're coming out on top. Finland, number one in the world. South Korea, number two. Pasi Sahlberg joins us today. He's Director General of the Center for International Mobility and Cooperation in Helsinki, author of Finnish Lessons, What the World Can Learn from Educational Change in Finland, a former math and science teacher himself. We're having a little trouble getting through to Seoul, South Korea. Maybe we'll still succeed. But I want to welcome into our conversation right now from the National Center on Education and the Economy, Mark Tucker. He's president there, joins us today from the Bahamas, but they're in Washington and based in Washington, studying what the U.S. might learn from international models of education. He's editor of Surpassing Shanghai, an agenda for American education built on the world's leading systems. Mark Tucker, thanks very much for joining us. Hello, Mark, are you there? Having trouble with that line for a second as well. Pasi Sahlberg, how about high-tech in Finnish classrooms? You're number one. Do you use a lot of technology?
Yeah, we just received a European level study about the technology in schools, and the interesting finding for Finland was that we are somewhere in the middle of the European school system in terms of the technology that we have in the school, but we are very close to the bottom when it comes to the use of technology in the schools. And this is a kind of a surprising thing also, because we have been investing fairly heavily on making sure that all the schools are connected to the internet and all the schools have enough facilities. So I think the Finnish success is by no means a result of heavy and systematic use of educational technology. It may be quite the opposite, that the teachers are, when they are asked their use of computers or laptops or whatever technology they have in the schools, is that they find it mostly difficult to decide what would be the pedagogy, how they could integrate the technology as a smooth way of enhance students' learning. So in a way we are catching up many other countries in Europe and in the world in the level of using ICT in schools.
But technology has not been at the heart of what you're doing. It's very much at the heart of South Korea's approach. I mean, you think a lot about education. What do you think of this apparent kind of anachronism here, that you've got Finland at number one with its style, South Korea, where kids go to school and then they go to after school and special study courses, very often late into the night, weekends, you know, technology just by the truckload, hyper competitive. It seems in many ways the opposite of your approach. What do you make of that, Pasi?
This must have a lot to do also with the overall cultures of the countries and nations. And unfortunately, I have never visited South Korea, so I cannot say anything from my own experience. But my sense is that also the cultures are very different, and the competition and discipline and order are probably much closer to the way that people in Southeast Asia think about many other things, not only education. And in Finland, it's the other way around, that we are kind of systematically looking for ways how we can minimize the effort and maximize the outcome. And this has been also the way in education. I personally believe that there must be a limit when doing more in terms of requiring students and pupils to do homework and follow instruction and, you know, do things related to what they're supposed to learn is just simply too much. It doesn't have any impact anymore. And maybe Finland and some other countries have been able to just figure out what is the kind of a golden balance between how much you require from people to do and what they can actually accomplish.
Minimizing effort is not how I would describe what South Korea does. Let's go now to South Korea, Seoul, in Northeast Asia. Okwa Lee joins us, professor of computer education at Chungbuk National University. She was on the Korean Presidential Committee Educational Innovation Vision 2030. She joins us now from the South Korean capital in Seoul. Okwa Lee, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
It's wonderful to have you here. Describe, if you would, for us, how intense is the effort that South Korean students and their families put into education? How, for beginners, just how much school they have, how many hours a day they're studying?
Oh, yes. Our intensive hours in school is very well known in the world. But that's not the only thing. Our society puts very high value in education. So when we spend a lot of time in schools, teachers and parents and the whole society expected that students should stay in school long hours and work hard. So this is a value. This is a culture. It's not just intensive hours of life. Students' daily life in school.
Why do you think South Korean students and families are prepared to push their children to so many hours in school, Okwa Lee?
We think education has a very high value in the life. We have a long history that education has been the ladder to the higher social class. Korea always has been a centralized kingdom, so government has a very strong influence in citizens' life. And in ancient times, there are only two ways to become a high class, born in a good family or become a government officer. And selecting a government officer always has been through their academic performances, not by their family, not by their will. So education has been the ladder for changing their social status.
And what about the status of teachers in South Korea? How they're chosen, how they're paid, their status in society?
Only very top quality students will get in school of education. That's like higher than any faculties, like higher than engineering, higher than many faculties. Only next to School of Medicine, I guess, higher than School of Law, and only very top quality 5% students can get in. And not only that, after graduating the School of Education, they have to go through very competitive tests to become a teacher. And that is very competitive, like 50 to 1. Only one student out of 50 can get in.
Wow.
And after to become a teacher, they go professional development periodically. They have to go through the teacher development workshop every year, and getting those retraining is very important to get our salary promotion and status promotion. Those teachers are always in, they always train themselves.
One in 50, that is an incredible ratio that get to be teachers. I know at the same time there is some unhappiness with how competitive things can be, how hard students work. I mean, I'm even reading here recently of a program in Korea where they would enforce a curfew so that students would be home from their private after-hours tutoring academies. They were paying citizens bounties to turn in students who were still studying out at tutoring shops after 10 p.m., and sort of chasing them home. And I'm reading here your education minister, Lee Joo-ho, saying, "You Americans see a bright side of the Korean system, but Koreans are not happy with it. You're ranking very high in the world. Why not happy?"
very competitive. Students are always aware of their academic performance. They are very conscious of their academic ranking. So to become a better student, they may go to a private training and do more informal education after class, after school. And if your friends go to private tutoring place, you want to go there too. So this is like a peer pressure also. And that becomes a vicious circle. Everybody go there. So after school, students tend to stay at our private tutoring until very late, which is a very sad, very dark side of our very competitive schooling.
Okwa Lee, please stand by there in Seoul, South Korea. Pasi Salzberg from Finland, please stand by. Let's go to our listeners. Hancock, Michigan. Miriam, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you, Tom?
I'm okay. What do you think as you listen along?
Well, I think that both systems have one big thing in common, that the federal government and the federal government has more control over the schools than the local communities, which is different from this country. And apparently they care a tremendous amount about kids and about their education.
Yes.
They put so much into it. And I don't see the same thing in this country.
We talk about education a fair bit. We wring our hands that we don't rank higher in the international rankings, don't we?
No, we don't. And, I mean, I remember one of the things that was really frustrating to me was when they were, when in this country they were saying, well, we need to have everyone in the country taking more STEM, you know, more science, technology,
yeah,
education, engineering, and math. And they wanted people to, the kids in school, to have more higher-level math. Well, what you end up doing is you end up dumbing down the math in order for more kids to be able to take the higher level math. Whereas both in Finland and in South Korea and many other countries around the world, the higher level classes, the kids are sorted out when they're about 16 in Finland and younger in South Korea.
Well, Miriam, let us look at that. I appreciate your call very much. Let me get one more right here, and we'll go to that as well. Kathy in Buffalo, New York. You're on the air, Kathy.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Where I live, a great deal of responsibility is placed on the parents in as far as a child's education is concerned, and I'm kind of wondering where the parent fits into the Finnish model.
Let us pick both of those up. Kathy, thanks for yours as well. Posse, first to you on parents and their involvement in their children's education. Do they carry the burden of making sure it happens, or is the teacher leading?
Yeah, look, I can actually combine these two interesting questions in one. The situation in Finland in terms of governing education is that the schools and the entire education is very much locally controlled and managed nowadays. So there's a central government has a very light hand anymore. It used to be 20, 30 years ago very different thing. And this is also bringing the question of parental involvement in our schools in a different light, because the parents really have a sense that they own the schools in their communities, and that's why when they are working together with the teachers and schools, that they, it's a kind of a normal and natural thing to do. The issue that we are now putting particularly attention in Finland is that where do you draw the line between home education, upbringing, and school instruction and teaching and learning? And that's sometimes a question or matter of argument and debate also in the communities, because some parents and homes are trying to shift some of the responsibilities to the schools and vice versa. So the parental involvement is a natural and normal thing in the system where the schools are owned by the communities and local authorities.
And what about the tracking or separation of high-performing students and others? Do you do that in Finland or not?
No, it's not. The tracking is not allowed at all in Finland. What probably the caller was referring to is that at the age of 16, in the end of our compulsory education, Finnish students, the young people, they can choose whether they go to high school that is like your high school, very much focusing on academic education and preparation for higher education, academic higher education, or vocational high schools where they can learn, they will learn the professions or qualifications that they have chosen to. And now we have a situation where this distribution of academic and vocational high schools is very close to 50-50, and it's not based on ability, but it's based on interest and motivation of students.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the two top-ranked countries in the world for education, Finland and South Korea, how they get to the top by very different paths, and what the U.S. might learn. Posse Sahlberg joins us. He's author of Finnish Lessons and Director General of the Center for International Mobility and Cooperation in Helsinki. That's under the Finnish Ministry of Education and Culture. From Seoul, South Korea, Okwa Lee joins us, professor at Chungbuk National University in South Korea. Let's get a call from North Reading, Massachusetts. Jake is calling. Jake, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
The achievement gap in the United States, that is the educational disparity between wealthier, primarily white students in the suburbs and poor, primarily students of color in urban areas, clearly falls on racial lines. And it seems that one striking similarity, given all the disparities mentioned in culture between the top two, are the Scandinavian countries and South Korea's racial homogeneity. So perhaps it's easier to teach every student well when your neighbors and your government see all kids as equally deserving. Am I wrong that race disparities, or a lack thereof, matter? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Jake. Okwa Lee in South Korea, do you think it's important to South Korea's success that you have quite a homogeneous population? Do you think it's more difficult with the diversity in America, economic and racial, or not?
Well, Tom, we have educational policies based on equity. Equity means school facilities and school support financially and teacher support, curriculum support. We have the same quality everywhere in Korea, whether you live in a very small little town or you live in a big city, we have the same quality. So students, it doesn't matter whether you live in a rich, affluent area or you live in a small, less affluent area, you get the same quality educational access. And it is interesting that when we developed, when Korean government developed policies for educational development, we focused from the bottom. So we focused on primary education and then senior, junior high school and then the higher education from the start of our educational development.
Pasi Solberg, let me turn that question to you, if I may, Pasi. Do you see race or a lack of equity in the U.S. as a problem for the American system, looking at it from the Finnish perspective?
From the equity point of view, I think our societies, nations are very different, and Finnish school system should actually be seen as part of the entire welfare nation and country. So it's not the kind of an island of education or schools where things are done independently from the surrounding society, and that's why if I I used to live in the United States for 5 years, and I know a little bit about how the country works in the social policies or welfare or health policies. We are very, very different different countries, and that's why I think it's normal to see the Finnish school system also as a place for enhancing and making sure that the school is helping everybody to feel well and have access to health and well-being services, unlike here in the United States, where these things are very much more on the responsibility of parents and homes. So that's why I think we are very different in this way, and also the goals of education are very different, because well-being is such an important overall educational goal in the Finnish school system.
Let's get an American perspective in here with our Finnish and South Korean guests. Mark Tucker joins us now. He's president of the National Center on Education and the Economy. Mark, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, I'm glad to be with you today.
What do you think the United States can learn from these two? Here they are, number one and two. We're number 17 on this test. Can we look at these and find the way forward, or are these just different worlds?
I think I can. Get to that, though. I'd like to comment on the question you were just asking your other guests.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it'd be unfortunate if your listeners came away with a view that we in the United States can only achieve at high levels if we somehow become a homogeneous country, which is not about to happen.
Of course not.
And when you look at the record, what you see is that there are, I think, two different kinds of variation here that are really important. One is variation in race and ethnicity. And if you're talking about that, it's important to recognize that if you look at national background in particular, the Canadian population, school population, has a higher percentage of kids born abroad than does the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they are performing at much higher levels. If you look at Australia, Australia similarly has levels of from countries all over the world, just as Canada does, that are in the same range as the United States, but has a considerably higher average student performance.
How do you account for those that variation from the U.S.?
Well, let me make one more little point here. The big difference, I think, that is relevant here. So I don't think that race and ethnic background is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But the big point that I think is relevant is that the variation in parental income in the United States is now greater than that in any other industrialized country. And this, I think, is a big problem for American schools, I think, to some extent.
We've got that sort of banana republic income distribution menacing us.
It wasn't that way 30 or 35 years ago when our income distribution was among the most even in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case now. We're at the other end of the spectrum, and it is an enormous problem for our schools. It's not an excuse for not doing it's important to recognize that. I think when you look at Korea and Finland, the striking thing about these two very different countries is something that early on in the interview, which is the attention they pay to the quality of their teachers. Both countries are leaders in this respect. In both countries, many of their most able young people are going into teaching. In both countries, the status of teachers is very high. In both countries, quality teachers and teaching is an essential element of national strategy.
Could we emulate that in the United States? What would that take?
Yes, we could. One other point I want to emphasize before we get to that, and that is another point that came up in you with Pazi and in the remarks just made from your participant in Korea, and that is the way schools are funded in both of these countries. They're putting more money behind the kids who are harder to educate than the kids who are easier to educate. That is the only way that you're going to get a country up to high standards more or less across the board.
Is that the opposite of the American approach?
In both of these respects, that is with respect to teacher quality and the way schools are funded, it is the opposite of what we do here in the United States. For a very long time in the United States, including up to the present, what we have most prized about our teachers is how cheap they are to employ. And this worked all right for us when we were mostly interested in basic skills. It is a disaster now. We had the benefit for many, many years of having a supply of qualified women whose only choices really were secretarial work, nursing, and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got much better teachers than we deserved if you look at the way we paid them and the conditions under which they worked.
Historically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And in fact, right up to the present time, if you look at the older teachers in our schools, they're the very women I'm describing.
Yeah.
But we aren't going to have them anymore. We have more women in our law schools and many of our other professional schools than we have men. And so the very able women that we have had in great supply for decade after decade are no longer going into teaching. They're going into the high-status, high-pay, high-respect professions. And you asked whether we can change that. We can change that. If you listen to what, if your listeners listen to what Pazi and said and what the Koreans are doing, they pay their teachers in the top-performing countries at levels typical of what beginning engineers are paid.
Mm-hmm.
In Finland and in South Korea, for a very, very long time, teachers were among the most highly respected members of the society. Lots of stories I could tell you about that. That's hardly the case in the United States. When you look at where respect comes from, it really comes from lots of places. In the United States, for the most part, a school of education is where you go if you can't get into another professional school leading to a higher status profession. As you've heard, that's not the case in Finland and South Korea.
Absolutely.
It's as hard or harder to get into schools preparing teachers as it is to get into schools preparing architects, engineers, accountants, and so on. We're not going to be able to get young people who could be architects, engineers, or medical doctors and so on, going into teaching as long as they know that they're going into a professional school that people go to if they can't get into any other school. It's just not going to happen. We have to raise the standards for getting into our teacher schools, not a little, but a lot. We have to pay them at levels that signify, in a very pay-conscious culture, that we care as much about teachers as we do about people in the higher status professions. We have to provide them comparable conditions of work.
Let me get a caller here, Elisa in Brookline, Massachusetts. Elisa, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to talk. I have three kids, and one of them went through the Brookline school system. Two of them still are in the Brookline school system, which is a great system, but a lot of the kids in the middle fall through because we don't have enough choices. We have one school in the greater Boston area, the Minuteman School, which offers vocational.
So what do you hear in the Finland story, in the South Korea story, Elisa? What do you hear in these?
I hear that there are, well, South Korea, I wanted to make a point with South Korea and Japan, which are similar, that there's a lot of suicides with kids because they put on too much pressure. So that scares me.
Let me pick up that. Our time is short. But Okwa Lee, what about that? There's a lot of concern about too much pressure in South Korea. Is it worth the pressure to achieve the global ranking that you have?
Yes, indeed. Students feel a big pressure on their academic performances. And it is true that we have a very high suicide rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a big social issue that how we can make students happy and still keep the quality of the education at the level we have now, or even more.
Mark Tucker, on that point, there's been a lot of talk about tiger moms and maybe tiger dads, too, in the U.S. in the last year or two. You know, parents who, even without living in South Korea, sort of adopt that super pressure cooker approach, you know, really put the pressure on their kids. Is that the way to go for this country, the South Korean way, or can we do it the Finnish way? Are they equally available to us?
No, they're not equally available. If it were me and I could decide these things, which mm-hmm. I can't, yep. I would take a middle road. People I know in the South Korean government officials see that kind of pressure as an enormous problem. They wish their parents put less pressure on their kids. They don't think it's good for them to be working from the early morning hours until the time they go to bed at 10 or 11 at night on their schoolwork. And I don't either. The Finnish example proves that it's not necessary to do that in order to achieve at high levels. On the other hand, I don't think we can say the answer here is simply to be relaxed. Everything is going to work out.
Yep.
It isn't going to work out. The difference between, on this point, between Finland and the United States is that Finland is a country that places an enormous value on education. The kids in that country know that if they don't become well educated, they face a bleak future, and they're surrounded by kids who believe also that studying hard in school is a good idea, that doing well in school is a good idea, and it's the key to their future.
It's the culture. I want to go to Pasi Sahlberg, if I may. Our time is very short here. Pasi, you know Finland's system inside and out. You've lived in the U.S. Step back here. Think big with us for a minute. What's your big advice to the United States on this front, Pasi?
Okay, I would give three things. First, I think America needs more focus on enhancing equity in education, as we have been speaking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think if you are in the business of standardizing anything in education, you should standardize teacher preparation, like Mark was saying, and also the school funding that Mark referred to, that these should be some things that should be equally standardized throughout the system. And give up standardization in teaching and learning, and particularly standardized testing. I think you are investing too much in standardized testing, and mm-hmm. it's taking too much time away from children and students. And lastly, Tom, I think this country would benefit from understanding that children must have time to play in school and out of school, and that the play is part of the children's life, and they should be given an opportunity to practice this, particularly because using your mind and imagination and creativity are becoming so important things, and you can only develop that one systematically if you allow your children to have relaxed time in school and also not burden them with the homework at home so that they can develop the skills and abilities of play.
We just have a second. Can a country the size of the United States aspire to be number one? Is it possible at our size? Posse?
Yeah, sure. But I wouldn't advise to put your target as being number one. I think the smarter target in education today would be to provide good education for all, as just like your great presidents 200 years ago have said that the equal educational opportunity should be the goal in education, not to be number one in the world.
Pasi Sahlberg from Finland. Okwa Lee with us from Seoul, South Korea. Mark Tucker from the National Center on Education and the Economy. Our deep thanks to all of you. Thank you very much for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.